And I flat out told him, I was like, how do you feel about bringing somebody in who's experienced in technical apparel and knows nothing about fishing? And he said, makes me feel pretty uncomfortable, but I know that you understand technical clothing and understand the importance of the performance of it, the construction of it, the execution. And we need people with that type of experience bringing to the company. And I very quickly, when I accepted the job and our family moved a couple months later, learned how to fish.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're thrilled to have Lindsay Vincent Culper with us, an example of creativity and sustainability in the outdoor apparel industry. Growing up amidst the breathtaking mountains of Colorado, Lindsay's life has been a testament to the beauty and transformative power of the great outdoors. Her passion for enhancing outdoor experiences through apparel led her to obtain a bachelor's degree in apparel design and merchandising from Colorado State University. Lindsay's career has been a vibrant journey of innovation, focusing on encouraging people to embrace nature. Beyond her professional endeavors, Lindsay's personal life is deeply intertwined with nature, from skiing to her beloved fly fishing alongside her husband, Red, and their daughters, Opal and Ruby, and their adventurous pooch, Lewis, in the stunning landscapes of Bozeman, Montana. Today, Lindsay continues to inspire and empower through her volunteer work with Casting for Recovery, demonstrating the healing power of nature through fishing. So join us as we dive into Lindsay's inspiring journey, exploring the depths of creativity, her impact on the outdoor industry, and her passion for advocating for connecting with the natural world. Welcome to Innovation Insights, Lindsay. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. It's an absolute honor to be here as well.
We have known each other for a long, long, long time. For our audience, Lindsay was a former student of mine at Colorado State, and we worked together. She worked alongside me and did some student teaching with me, and I think I might have been your advisor. I don't remember. But we spent a lot of time together. So it's just been fun to reconnect and watch your career grow and expand. I remember, did you start off at Rocky Mountain Clothing Company?
That was my first job directly from graduating. Was an assistant at Rocky Mountain, and I specifically worked on the Cruel Girl collection.
Jeez, I know the Cruel Girl collection because I also worked at Rocky Mountain Clothing a long time before Lindsay did, but had some hand in doing some development of that collection before it really blew up. And the team that Lindsay worked with really took it to the next level. So it's really cool, really cool. But you just are such an outdoor and nature lover. And I remember sometimes in class, we'd be in the computer lab and you're like, oh yeah, over the weekend, I was out climbing this mountain or doing this. And I was always holding my breath like, I'm glad to see you back. Because the Rocky Mountains were pretty tall and steep and and what really spurred your just love of the outdoors in both your professional and your personal life?
Yeah, I think it was just growing up in the mountains in general. I had a twin brother and you would get home from school and my mom would be like, don't come home until it's dark. And just being outside all the time. And then as I went through years and then went through college, my second year in college before I transferred to CSU is when I discovered the opportunity that I could apply what I love doing outdoors by creating my own clothing that fit me and allowed me to have more freedom of movement and flexibility doing what I loved. And at the time it was rock climbing. And pretty much from then until now, everything that my family has been just completely immersed in is being outside as much as possible.
That makes sense. And you have really done, you know, some amazing work, and we'll talk about some of the different areas. And you had a program at Colorado State that was a generalist design program, but you really did, I remember, tailor many of your projects towards the outdoor industry. And how did, you know, your knowledge as an actual participant in outdoor activities help impact the way that you designed?
Absolutely. I think that's the question. And for me, it's being the end user and understanding like what works and what doesn't work, or why, I guess would be a specific example would be wearing a garment while you're climbing and it's getting cold outside. You want the sleeves to be long enough, but you don't want to have any adherence to flexibility. And it's okay, how can we come up with an idea for a fabric that's going to work really well, that stretches with your body, moves with you, doesn't overheat you, and doesn't get in the way of your performance for what you're doing. And so it's always having the opportunity to be out there doing something and coming up with an idea. You know what, if we change this, or we had this feature in a hood that keeps the hood on my head when it's really windy outside, I can make that a better experience for the end consumer for what they're doing. And it's been pretty amazing to be able to get to do that my whole career.
At it. And I've always believed, especially I developed this belief when I was in Colorado, that you needed to be part of that target market. There's some markets you don't have to be, but if you're developing technical apparel for a market, you really need to be a part of it to understand it, because that there's the aesthetics of it, but that functionality can be life-saving. And so it's really important. One thing that we didn't, I don't think I put this on the questions when we were talking about it, but you've had some experience of developing some very high profile technical apparel for the United States Olympic team. Would you talk about that? I was just like, wow, that is, I was like, rock star. That is so cool. That is so cool. I think you came up to Fort Collins one time, like, oh yeah, you know, I need to build the wind tunnel. Yeah, going over this wind tunnel, you know, testing things for the Olympic team's uniforms. I'm like,
it's amazing. And Spider After Sports is based in Boulder, Colorado, and they're still there. And they have been the national sponsor for the U.S. Olympic Alpine ski team for 30, 40 plus years, since Spider was founded in 1978. And I had the opportunity in the years that I worked there for 8 years in the early 2000s to work with the U.S. ski team, specifically fine-tune and perfect the patterns within the ski suits used by the athletes. So an example would be the athletes are allowed to wear very, very fast, low wind-resistant garments. And what this does for them that enhances their performance is, if you're skiing in a garment that you see in the Olympics, which are typically covered in spider webs, is the way that Spider had originally done it, they are able to have an advantage of getting to the finish line faster. And what I had the opportunity to do was work individually with each of the athletes, as well as scientists and wind tunnels throughout the United States. I went to probably three different ones in my tenure there. And what we do is we bring the athletes in, we completely fine-tune and fit the individual suits to specific athletes. For example, at the time it was Bodie Miller, Ted Ligety, Julia Mancuso, and at the time Lindsey Vonn. And it was such an amazing experience, because you get to tailor these uniforms to these athletes using the fabric that we worked with, developed, and created with professional fabric mills. And the exciting part about it is every 4 years, you have an opportunity to really enhance what it is that you're offering those athletes, so that you can give them the competitive advantage. We had a saying called Hundies Matter. if you can cross that finish line a hundredth of a second faster than an opponent, you're going to win the race. And the technology incorporated within the fabric that they're wearing for their uniforms contributes.
Amazing. And how, because I know you're a skier, so how did that help inform your design and product development process and just working with the athletes? Because you know, you could talk the language too, I assume.
Yeah, I think a good example would be really understanding and learning from a skiing perspective, the speeds that these athletes can obtain and get up to. Also comprehending how to tailor their suits to fit them in their slowest wind resistant position. And understand like a difference between a tuck and skiing up straight is going to affect the way that the skier, whether they're doing downhill, GS, slalom, being able to understand the moves that they're moving into and out of during the race and taking that and making the suit as fast as possible in the most wind resistant position, which will be them coming up out of a turn, out of a gate. If they jump and their hands need to come out, they're going to slow down. So how do we make the suit fit them to where the wind resistance decreases in those slower positions? And then when they get into their tuck, which is going to be their fastest position, they get the fastest performance out of the suit. And what makes the suit become faster is the air that passes through the fabric. And or air that flows through the fabric, the slower the fabric's actually going to be. And as the porosity is measured, and the FIS, which is the Ski Federation, I have to remind myself of what the FIS is, that went out. We have to build the suits within a certain porosity parameter, and it cannot go below 30 PSI, which means air has to pass through the suit at a rate that is not lower than 30 PSI. If it's lower than that, it's considered too fast and dangerous athlete. So that is the parameters that we have to follow to work with a fabric mill, create the fabric, make it the fastest fabric out there with the lowest PSI to 30 as possible. And then we have the most competitive suit out on the hill.
Amazing.
It's really fun.
Amazing. And another, I have so many soapboxes that I get up on and I jump off of. And one of them is the importance of textiles and understanding textiles as a designer and product developer. And so what are your thoughts about that? Am I just full of it, or you can tell me?
No, it goes into the fabric, whether you're doing a design for something that's like a high fashion function, or you're building something that's going to protect somebody from the elements when they're outside. The textile is the key factor to making the garment a success and making the person wearing it. It depends on who the target consumer is or what they're doing, but making sure that fabric meets the needs that you're looking for the end result. For an example, my most recent role is I joined Grendon's in April of this year, and I am their new senior category manager. And I'm managing all of sportswear and apparel for them. But Grendon's is known for protecting commercial fishermen specifically for over 100 years from the elements so that they can do their job while they are out there performing it. And the fabrics that we're being forced from our outerwear, our rain gear, to our footwear, to even our base layers, all of that has to work together to keep them as dry as possible, as warm as possible, so that they can perform their jobs. Going back to your question, this fabric is key to everything.
Well, thank you for supporting my soapbox and helping me stay up on it, because 30 some years in academia, that has always been one of my beliefs, that you're going to be a good designer or product developer. You need to understand your materials first off and foremost, understand them inside and out. But okay, I will jump off of that soapbox. And so there's points in one's life where you just remember where you were when you had conversations or that happened. And so I remember at one point I was standing in my living room in Fort Collins by my windows, looking out at the Front Range and Rockies. And I was on the telephone with you. And you told me, I am thinking about leaving Spider and I have this opportunity in Bozeman, Montana with this company that is doing fishing products. And I just remember standing there. I think it was evening time when we were talking. I was like, you're what?
You've been designing Olympic ski uniforms. And you're moving what?
Tell us about that transition and that work. And then we'll get into your latest position.
Yeah. Which
relates to that too.
Yeah. Definitely a big move in my career as well as a step in going to work for a company and build products for a company for something I had never done before. And I had the opportunity to come in and lead product development for Sims Fishing, which is located in Bozeman, Montana. And Sims, it has been around since 1982 or 81, I think, and has been building fishing gear for fly anglers, anglers specifically out of Bozeman for years. And one of the things that was so intriguing to me is I had never been to Montana. I'd never been to Bozeman before I interviewed for the job. And when I came in and I got to see like the town, the area, the land, as well as meet everybody at Sims, I was blown away by the opportunity. And I remember meeting with the president at the time, Casey Walsh, during my interview. And I flat out told him, I was like, how do you feel about bringing somebody in who's experienced in technical apparel and knows nothing about fishing? And he said, makes me feel pretty uncomfortable. But I know that you understand technical clothing and understand the importance of the performance of it, the construction of it, the execution. And we need people with that type of experience to bring into the company. And I very quickly, when I accepted the job and our family moved a couple months later, learned how to fish. Lucky for a while there. And here it is. Gosh, almost 13 years later, and I'm completely, literally emerged in the fishing industry from my husband, Red, our children, volunteering for Cassie for Recovery, working for Sims for 12 years, and now working.
Amazing. And what is it about fly fishing that attracts people to it and why? And you've mentioned some of the reasons why the apparel is important, but I've heard some meditative parts of it and things like that.
Yeah, it's definitely an outdoor sport. You are completely surrounded by nature. And not only are you surrounded by nature, you're by water, whether you're fishing on a lake, on a river, or even in the ocean. And fly fishing specifically is basically an incredibly calming experience. Outside, you're surrounded by the sounds of eagles, the sounds of cranes flying by. There's the sounds of the ripple water flowing at your feet when you're fishing. And it is very meditative because you're out there and you're targeting to hopefully catch whatever fish is in the river around here. Everything, we have rainbow trout, brown trout, grayling, native whitefish. And it's just a moment that forces you to slow down, listen to the environment around you, and just step away the worries of the world. It's a pretty amazing. It can be very frustrating too, but that's part of the whole experience. You go the whole day without touching a fish, but you're out in nature, you're in the elements, and you are surrounded by a very peaceful situation. It's quite enlightening.
Right. Sounds amazing. And it sounds like you've fallen in love with the sport.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen images on your social media of you out there. I'm like, wow, just wow. And that has led you, I mean, we'll come back to some apparel topics, but Casting for Recovery, this organization that you have been involved with and builds upon this meditative aspect. So can you talk a little bit about that organization and your role?
Yeah, Crossing for Recovery, non-for-profit organization, and it's infiltrated throughout the entire United States. It was founded and started here in Bozeman, gosh, over 25 years ago. And what Casting for Recovery does is it's targeted specifically to bring women diagnosed with breast cancer, no matter what phase that they are going through, and give them an opportunity to step back and experiencing the healing powers of fly fishing. And the organization brings in, touch almost 800 to 900 women a year by doing this. And what it incorporates is bringing in volunteers such as myself. So non-for-profit organization has a total of 11 to 12 full-time members and over 1,800 volunteers. And my role and experience with them is I was aware of Casting for Recovery in my years working for SEMS because we would partner and provide fundraising opportunities for the organization, as well as obviously making the apparel that the women to go fishing and experience. And I had an opportunity to volunteer as the Montana One specifically. There's two programs in Montana. I'm with the Southwestern, and be the program coordinator. And what that incorporates is working with a couple of the national staff team members, but working with a team of an additional 9 to 10 volunteers and organizing the retreat, managing, working with all of the participants that are going to come in and experience it. And it's all to bring women in touch with breast cancer into a community together, introduce them to fly fishing, giving them an opportunity to reflect on their experience of what they've been going through and expand their community reach. I think there's a very big breadth of anybody that's affected by breast cancer, of how they deal with it. And some people can internalize it and not really communicate. A lot of people may not reach out to other women affected by it. And our retreats allow that opportunity for an inner community within the region. Montana is a pretty big state and we're spread out. There's a lot of people spread out. So we've got women that are affected all the way out eastern Montana, east of Billings, as well as here specifically in Bozeman. And so it gives us the opportunity to bring 14 women together, teach them fly fishing, teach them the healing powers of it, and bring them together.
Well, sounds like a wonderful organization and program. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. You've always been a leader and a person to jump in and be willing to help out. So I'm not surprised that you're involved with that at all. And also part of your leadership, and it's very reflective on your resume, is team management, product creation, and project management. So how do you do that and manage a team? Because you've managed various teams and they kept everyone innovative and creative in the process too.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think managing a team is super important for one, just making sure that whatever it is that you're doing, whichever, if you're working for a company, starting your own company, or even doing what I did with Casting for Recovery, it's bringing everybody together, having a clear point of view and a direction of what the end goal is and why, and then being able to establish like timelines and milestones and go-to-market milestones. And everybody has their part. We like to say there's like, within design, there's a three-legged stool where you have like your designer, you have your product developer, and you have your merchandiser, and they all have to work together to put together a product that's going to be rolled out to an end consumer, no matter what that end consumer is, whether it's a fly fisherman, where it's somebody who's hunting, a climber, or a skier. You guys all have to work together. And I think bringing people together and understanding their different personalities and their different learning types is all about managing the team. And then getting celebrate what it is that you're putting together in the end and seeing the end result.
Yeah. I like that part too, the different learning styles, which is so important, and accepting that there's diverse ways of learning and knowing, and then also celebrating in the end too. Oh, sustainability, I know, has been something that's been important for you. And we were you know, both at Colorado State, where I think we had the green guy all over campus. We're the green university. I think you were there during that time. As we had a student painted in green paint, and you know, it was on posters and billboards and everything. As we come from a place where sustainability has long, long history, and for outdoor apparel industry, it's really important. How do you, or how have you, incorporated sustainable practices in the design and product development? And then what are some of those challenges too?
Yeah, I think throughout the couple of decades of being in the outdoor industry, we've seen this kind of evolve and change. And I think sustainability is one of those terms that can mean something different to different people. And the way that you can be sustainable can go anywhere from using recycled materials, which is pulling the recycled bottles and opportunities to reuse as much as you can in a material setting as possible. But I also think that sustainability also can lean in on quality and dependability and long-lasting products. If you're able to build something, especially that meets the demands of the rigorous outdoors, whether it be a pair of waders, whether it be a PU, completely waterproof, rainproof bib worn on a commercial fishing boat, or even a base layer or a sweater that's going to last a really long time, it's more sustainable because you don't have to completely repurchase something over and over again. So I think the combination of being aware of using recyclable materials where you can, and this includes everything from recycled cardboard boxes in which the product is shipped in to their retailers, to biodegradable poly bags that a garment is put in, or using paper bags that can be recycled. There's many different ways of applying sustainability to the product that we're using. And I think it's very deep within the outdoor industry to make our planet a better place by considering everywhere that we can help out to make the product more sustainable.
Well, and thank you for, you know, addressing the full supply chain there too, from boxes and shipping and things like that.
Yeah, and it's all a factor in to making the place that we live now a better place in the future.
Yeah. So important. And the outdoor industry is changing. Everything's changing, it seems to be, these days. So what are some of the new trends and technologies and materials that you're excited about that are happening in the field?
So one of the biggest challenges taking place in the outdoor industry right now is, for years, the outdoor industry was able to keep people out in the elements longer by providing very waterproof material. And one of the applications of making those materials waterproof is not only the laminate or the coating put on the backside of the fabric, but it's the DWR that has been applied to it. So 20 years, 15 years ago, the chemical compound of the DWR that was applied basically allowed water. It was coated onto the fabric. The fabric would absorb the coating and then allow water, if you're stuck in a rainstorm, to hit the fabric and not absorb into the fabric, but actually beat up and roll off. The performance of it was amazing, but here we are in 2024. And it has been discovered that the application and the chemicals put into the DWRs that help the fabric perform is not the greatest for our environment. It doesn't biodegrade. And over the years, the level of which the DWR could be performed has been lowered to be able to be more biodegradable and friendlier to the environment. Now, with that means that even though we may have a waterproof, breathable jacket built out of Gore-Tex, the exterior of the fabric is not going to bead up as much as it did 20 years ago, although you're still able to maintain waterproofness. And so that's, I think, a good example of how the outdoor industry is constantly changing and evolving to become better by recognizing that maybe some of the solutions that were brought up 20 years ago may not be going further down the road. And one thing that's interesting with working with Grundens, being around for over 100 years and protecting fishermen from the elements, is the Herc bib, which is a legacy piece for Grundens, is built out of polyurethylene. And it is not breathable, but it is 100% waterproof and it can last for a very long time. So somebody can get a pair of heart bibs and they can work in them for 15 years. And it's one of the few designs out there that has not been altered in 30 years. It's the same design as it was when it was first launched. So that's a shift of going from how to keep the fabric lightweight and breathable, but yet waterproof, to going back to a fabric that's been around for years that is actually performing for keeping you dry.
Oh, those are great examples. Those are really great examples. And thank you for really explaining the technical properties or physical properties of the fabrics very well for audience members who may not have that background.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Artificial intelligence, how is that impacting design and product development for your team?
I would say that where that's impactful is, one, we're able to gather information very quickly about and like how products being used. I don't know if that's necessarily influenced by AI, but I just think the access to data is incredibly fast. And that we're able to shift and update products, think about future products and roadmapping in the future. Let's see, what else with AI? We are able to develop product at a much higher level through technology, through like 3D design and pattern making and 3D fitting. And because of that, we're able to decrease the lead time it takes to come up with an idea and a concept in a garment, build a prototype. You can actually build it on the computer. You can put it on this 3D model, see how it's going to fit, see how the fabric's going to drape, but without ever even putting the material. So there are a lot of advances in technology in that way.
Yeah. So lead time, as you said, has been really cut down from inception of the product to getting it to market. I'm going to age myself here. Back in the Stone Ages of the early 90s, it used to be like a year and a half lead time. Some people are like, really? Took that long to get a product created? But it was a lead time of a year and a half. What's a typical lead time now?
It hasn't changed that much. And one of the reasons is, especially from a soft goods perspective, is you still, once a material is identified to be used for the product, it has, the yarn has to be produced, it has to be knitted or woven, it has to go through all of the finishing products. And that has not necessarily, the lead times for the actual production of the material has not shortened. But what has shortened is once the material is confirmed, is we're able to go through prototyping quicker. And so the length going from first design, first proto, to approving for sales samples or going into a size set and going into production has shortened.
Yeah, lead time, that's a very interesting fact that you make about, again, the fabrics, that foundation, and that if they're being developed, it takes a long time, which also, impacts the cost. And sometimes we don't understand why a certain garment costs so much, but there's a lot of thought that goes into creating the product from fiber, sometimes all the way through getting it to the retail store. So
another thing about AI that I think has impacted our industry from just a design perspective is now there's capabilities of basically going to a website and saying, hey, I'd like to create a shirt. And you can take a picture of a shirt and drop it in. And then all of a sudden you're able to get a very technical drawing of a product that can be used for a design. And so I think being able to translate ideas without having the technical skill of physically doing it has made it quite easier. And maybe a lot of really good ideas are going to come to fruition because AI has helped to solve for the actual skill in designing product, patterning product, shaping it.
I love that example because the reason why I'm just so laughing is because before I left Colorado State and I was teaching, it was a 300-level design course, and I had one of the students that was like
Oh, can we just...
I was teaching a CAD, computer-aided pattern making class. I think you took it from me too when I taught it. And so the student was like, can we just scan the picture in of the garment that we want to make, and it'll just make the pattern? And we're not quite there yet, but we are very close. And I just remember when the student asked me this, I'm like, oh yeah, really? No, that's not possible. And I'm thinking, that's never going to happen.
Yeah,
here we are. Pretty soon. It's just amazing.
So how do you balance it all?
Leading a team with work and a family and a busy, active family that's outdoors doing things. It sounds like an active dog,
a little active puppy.
And your involvement, your own personal health, self-care. Because I believe it's part of innovation, too, is that you have to take care of yourself so that you can be innovative. And so how do you do all that?
Yeah, I think it's life, right? That there's an important balance of work and life and personal life and your family. And I feel very privileged that I've had the opportunity to enjoy my personal sports and experiences and apply it to my job. And so that is one way to be able to balance it all out. But it's also, in a way, difficult too, because sometimes you're consumed. Your work consumption takes over what you should be doing and you're down. And it's, do you ever turn off? Right? When a couple weekends ago, we decided spontaneously that we heard that fish were moving upstream in the Salmon River over in Idaho. And so we decided to do a quick weekend trip where we drove 4 hours to swing for steelhead and ended up catching one, which was amazing and absolutely incredible. But the whole time we were doing it for ourselves. We were talking work, my husband and I, because we're always thinking about, oh, well, what if we tried this? Or what if you had this type of garment and you were wearing and it's cold and it's windy? And so there's a weird balance. Are you working or are you enjoying personal life? And I would say that, yes, there are boundaries that need to be set. And I think that it helps to balance that out. My husband and I have one or two nights a week where we'll talk work and then we'll shut the work talk off and we're like, okay, we're going to do something for us that has nothing to do with the fishing industry. And it's to balance that out. And then it's also your kids. Right now we've got Opal's 13 and she is involved in many different sports. And then our daughter Ruby is 7 and she's got her different sports. And it's also scheduling out who needs to be where to pick up who, to take who, to drop this off. And it just comes down to scheduling.
Yeah. Project management.
Yeah. And I do think that there is that balance of if it's a weekend or it's a week coming up that you're going to take off, it's okay to disconnect from your world of what you're doing for your job and be with your family and be here. And we all have to remind each other to do that, because I think you're right. If you don't take care of yourself, if you can't be able to show up as your best self in your work environment every day, how are you going to be able to show up for everybody else?
Yeah, I so agree.
I was going to say, going back to like innovation and like creativity, I don't know if you experience this, but there can be burnout. There can just be like where your brain is not in it. I have days where I need to sit down and I need to write a creative brief to where I'm going to write a design brief for what the next product is. And some days my head's not clear for it. And so being able to be innovative, I think you have to be able to have a clear mind. Do that, you've got to take care of yourself to figure out how to get in your like best creative self. And that can apply to so many things. It can apply to even like writing marketing copy, or it can be applied to different ways out how to get awareness out for reaching Casting for Recovery future participants and be up with fundraising ideas to help fund those programs. And yeah, there's my little.
Oh, yeah. No, I so agree with you. I agree. Yeah, you're so right that you can burn out on creativity or just feel like I have no more ideas. I remember at some points in some roles I've had, Thursday by 3 o'clock, I was done, could not make any more decisions. And luckily Fridays was a little bit lighter most of the time, but yeah, you need that space to really. Yeah, but it sounds like you've done a great job of balancing. I know it's work and it's that you have to be intentional about it. And some of you and your husband have made that, put some boundaries there. And but then taking time to do some fun things too. That's great. Take some time off to drive 4 hours and go fishing. Oh, so now that, again, your experience and your journey has been so inspiring and your career, what advice would you have for young designers or merchandisers, anyone wanting to enter the fashion or apparel industry? Because you've worked with so many different aspects of it.
Yeah, I would say that the best opportunity is to coming out of graduating and looking into the workforce is reach out to companies that inspire you. Reach out to, if you have a particular love for any type of a material or a particular love for any type of end-use product, research the companies that align with what your visions are and start reaching out to them. See if there's internship opportunities. See if there's even entry-level opportunities just to get experience. I would say that was the best opportunity for me. That's how I got into the outdoor industry so quickly. And reach out to other students or students that have graduated and are in the field, anybody. I think who you know goes a really long way. And don't be afraid to take a chance on a job and put yourself out there. I think being able to have the courage to apply for a role that may be bigger than what you can do is an opportunity to meet more people and get your foot in the door. You can be creative in the way that you want to apply yourself. If you think about if you're somebody who's wanting to start your own company or start your own brand, think of creative ways of how that could be started.
This is great advice. Well, the one thing that we ask all of our guests is, how do you define innovation?
I would define innovation as coming up with new ideas and solutions to solve a problem. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a new scientific, never heard of thing that has been invented. Innovation can be applied in the ways of how you communicate to your end consumers. It can be applied to ways of how you solve for a better performing garment in the elements. It can be applied to your approach of how you pull a team together. And so that would be my definition of innovation.
That's a great definition. You know, it covers so many aspects of life. That's really wonderful. It has been just a joy to have you on the podcast, and I'm so proud of you and all of your accomplishments. There's all my students that I've had the opportunity to work with. It's just so fun to watch how your careers transform. And so again, it's just been fun. Thank you for sharing your journey with us today and your passions for the industry and for outdoors, and showing how people can marry a personal passion with a professional passion. And that is, you know, it's doable. It's really doable. And, you know, life is short, so we should be doing things that we truly love to do. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You were one of the biggest inspirations for me from the very beginning, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for you. So thank you for throughout all of the years. And here it is, like I said, almost 2+ decades later, we're still in contact. We still reach out for questions, and it started with you.
Oh, thank you. You're so kind. And you would have been where you are without me. I just, you know, gave some assignments and lent an ear every once in a while. And things like that. Shared some laughter.
Best memories.
Really fun times. Really fun times. So we'll have you back because I know you're going to continue to do some really exciting things. To our listeners, thank you for joining today's conversation. I hope that it inspires you when you listen to it or watch it. Please keep track of what Lindsay is up to, what she's doing, and think about your fabrics that you're wearing in a different way and how they're impacting your lives. And please remember to follow us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please, we need more subscribers. So please subscribe and share it with friends. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dr. Yolanda Sanders, and I'm signing off until next time. So please keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.